This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Yale professor William Nordhaus won the Nobel Prize in Economics last year for his work on the economic impacts of climate change. But Western Michigan University political science professor Paul Clements is among the critics who say that Nordhaus has thrown cold water on the urgency needed to address climate change. Clements, who is part of Western's Climate Change Working Group, will be part of a panel discussion on the true cost of climate change and its policy implications Friday afternoon, February 15th, beginning at 2 o'clock in room 3508 of Knaus Hall. Paul Clements, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. My pleasure.
How influential is William Nordhaus in the field of climate policy?
William Nordhaus is the leading climate change economist. He was the one who developed the integrated assessment model, which is the model that now all economists who do this use to integrate the information on the climate, how our world is getting warmer, and the economic effects of that, and bring that back all together to say, well, you put this together and say, how much should the government be prepared to spend to address this issue? So he developed the model for what we call the social cost of carbon. The fact that they gave the Nobel Prize to him reflects his dominance, his prominence in the economic community as just pretty much clearly accepted the leading climate change economist.
So when he received the Nobel Peace Prize and spoke at the banquet, he said, "The globe at century's end will be vastly different from today, and the condition of our world will depend on the steps that we in this generation take now to slow global warming." That sounds like something that you and others in the Climate Change Working Group would probably agree with.
Well, that is absolutely true. And it's partly because we currently have a president who's an absolute climate change denier and who's been moving us backwards, so that even Nordhaus's, what I'm going to say, completely inadequate analysis and his, he suggests a program of action that would be far more limited than what we really need. It's still his program is still so much more than what Trump says that sort of gives him space to make that kind of statement. However, if we look at the last 20 years, he has consistently been, as we say, throwing cold water. He's been consistently arguing against the international agreements, first the Kyoto Protocol and then the Paris Agreement, basically saying that they are far too alarmist, that they would impose much greater cost on the present, on our current generation, than we should do in terms of the likely future costs. Basically, as we can discuss, because his model severely underestimates the future cost. And I think that, you know, if we want to think about what you and I should be doing, what government should be doing, this is a critical basic piece of information.
Are we, though, gearing policy towards what William Nordhaus is suggesting in his research, or are we even falling short of that in terms of what our current policy is towards climate change?
Yeah, we're definitely even falling short of what Nordhaus says. And the simplest way to talk about this is, I'm going to get into the technicalities here a little bit now, that what he generates is what's called the social cost of carbon. And what that's trying to do is to say, okay, we all know that when we drive our cars, when we, you know, heat our homes, that we're generating carbon pollution. And then the social cost of carbon is saying, if we look at the long-term cost, the full cost of all the harms from that carbon pollution, and we break it down into each of our individual contribution, how much should we be paying per ton of carbon dioxide that we generate to offset those the effect of those future costs? So there's actually two pieces of this. One is, what cost should we impose? What is the value of that future cost today that we should impose the economists would say, through a carbon tax, to reduce, so that we would reduce our production of carbon pollution in an efficient way? But the other side of that is, what is the value of the harms that we're imposing on current and future generations? And therefore, what should we be doing about correcting those harms? because it's mostly the industrialized countries, the wealthy countries that are generating most of the carbon pollution, but it's the poor countries and the future generations that are going to bear the weight of most of those harms. So the social cost of carbon sort of heads in both directions. And if I can just simplify, Nordhaus proposes, if we look at today from his numbers, we'd be looking at a social cost of carbon of about $35 per ton of CO2. As I'll be discussing in our panel discussion, when you look more carefully, and what I'm saying is that Nordhaus's analysis, he makes a number of mistakes, and it gets a number of things wrong in his analysis. And I'm going to argue that a more reasonable number, there's a lot of uncertainties here, but a more reasonable number would be somewhere around today, $250 per ton of carbon dioxide instead of $35. Now, what that means for you and me is at $35, that would be, roughly speaking, 35 cents added to a gallon of gas. If it was $250 per ton, that would be roughly $2.50 added to a gallon of gas. So what we're saying is that, you know, when I fill up my car with gas, that for every gallon of gas that I buy, the price that I pay, that much again is being imposed on as harms on other people and future generations.
But you're also a political scientist,
right?
And so you understand that getting that done requires more than just you and I or William Nordhaus talking about it.
Right.
You have to get buy-in from the public. And
right.
I would say that even William Nordhaus's rather modest, as you say, carbon tax might be a tough sell. But if you're going to tell people that they got to pay an extra $2.50 a gallon for gas, that might be an even tougher sell. I guess it leads to the question of, is doing something, which is insufficient, better than doing nothing or waiting to do something bigger, not knowing when or if that will actually happen?
Well, we certainly should be taking action today, and we should have been taking action a long time ago. So the fact that both Nordhaus and I are calling for action, you know, puts us on the same side there. To come back to your earlier point, yes, imposing a carbon tax is a very, very hard sell politically. We've seen in France recently that just trying to impose a tax of 25 cents per gallon of diesel led people to come out into the streets. But let's look at Nordhaus's influence over the past 20 years. All this time, he's been saying that the urgency suggested by these intergovernmental panels, by the leading group of scientists around the world, he's been saying that urgency is completely misplaced. He's been saying that the global target of 2 degrees Celsius, preferably 1.5 degrees Celsius, is way too expensive. And his economically optimal model would take us to 3 degrees of warming in this century and 4 degrees of warming in the next century, which a lot of scientists think is really extraordinarily dangerous. So the very fact that a carbon tax is a hard sell is partly because the intellectual, the people, the professional communities who think about these issues for all these years, they've been hearing from the scientists that we should be doing a lot, but they've been hearing from the economists that no, we shouldn't. So if you think about how that contributes to the public discussion, you know, and I'm not saying that people are just going to follow the economics, but I'm going to say that in the long term, having the lead economist dramatically underestimate the true cost of carbon could even influence the political discussion.
Well, you bring up an interesting point there. William Nordhaus is an economist. He's not a climate scientist.
Correct.
Nor is he a political scientist, for that matter, although I think he maybe has a little more of a handle on how tough it would be to get a carbon tax instituted than he does on the degrees of warming that we can afford to sustain life as we know it in the next 50 to 100 years. But I guess I'm wondering, as someone who is a political scientist yourself but looks at this climate change issue, does it matter which lens you look through? Does it matter if you look through economics? Does it matter if you look through the climate science? Does it matter if you look at it from a political standpoint?
Well, certainly, you know, each one of us should be doing whatever we can to reduce our individual carbon footprint. But the reason why it matters to look at it from an economic perspective is that The key decisions about where we're going to be going with our carbon pollution are going to come from government. That because carbon pollution is an externality, because companies don't have to pay that cost when they make profits from selling, you know, gas or oil or whatever the case may be, it's only going to be the cost that government's willing to impose that will determine the speed of how soon we decarbonize, of how we move to a carbon-free future. And so the social cost of carbon is the critical policy variable that determines how fast the United States and other countries do it themselves, other countries are going to move to a zero carbon future. It's a political question of whether you can in fact impose that cost. But for example, our federal government, there was an effort in Congress to have a cap and trade system that failed. All right, you know, maybe partly because of people like Nordhaus at that time. But even still, our government has formed a number of years ago a working group on the social cost of carbon, and they adopted essentially Nordhaus's numbers, and they began to apply that to actual policy choices about the costs that our government was going to impose to reduce carbon pollution. So his numbers have already been used for some kind of policy. The Trump administration wants to take that backwards, but nevertheless, these economic numbers are incredibly important. They're the most important single piece of information as far as how policy is going to work on this.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. I'm speaking with Western Michigan University political science professor Paul Clements. He and other members of Western's Climate Change Working Group will take part in a panel discussion on Friday afternoon, February 15th, beginning at 2 o'clock, in room 3508 of Knaus Hall. They will discuss the true cost of climate change and its policy implications. I'm wondering if part of the argument here is a question of how much you do by incentives. And you know, maybe a carbon tax could be looked at as incentives. Maybe it's looked at as a mandate. But I mean, is that part of the question here? How much you're going to require people to do and how much you're going to maybe use carrots and sticks to try to nudge them in a certain direction?
Yeah, that's partly why economists like carbon taxes, is because it works through the incentive mode rather than through command and control. And I think that we can see this by looking at our electricity production. All right. Right now here in Michigan, we pay on average $175 per person per year for our electricity. Okay. If we were to employ Nordhaus's carbon tax, what he proposes, that would basically double that to $350 per person per year. If we took account of that, what I believe is the true cost of carbon, the actual harms we're imposing, we would really need to, even today, to raise that to $1,225 per person per year. That's based upon the fact that consumers' energy is currently producing a little over 30% of its energy through coal, another more than 10% from natural gas. Well, consumers' energy has a plan to move towards renewable, towards actually mostly solar.
And shut down their coal plant.
But they don't want to shut down their coal plants until 2040. They want to keep up a large part of coal production through 2030. If they had to pay the true cost of the energy that they were producing in terms of the harms that it's imposing on other people, they would be moving so much more rapidly towards solar. They are pushing policies that are going to make it harder for households to develop use our own solar panels. They're going to basically underpay us for solar energy that we might generate on our homes, and it's going to create a situation where we will probably see. I mean, again, if the policies move forward as they're moving today. That will dramatically reduce the number of households and businesses that adopt our own solar panels, because we'll be dramatically underpaid for that. That would not be accepted. That would not be possible if we had a high tax on carbon, if we're paying the true cost. And so it would move people just through the prices they pay to decarbonize, to reduce our carbon footprints, to move much more rapidly towards a situation where we can get all the energy that we need, even for pretty much our current lifestyles, from renewable sources.
But I think somebody who has just heard what you've said about how much of a carbon tax we truly need to address the social cost of carbon is going to say that sounds like an awful lot in the short term. And how long is that bridge from where we're at paying an additional $2.50 for a gallon of gas, for paying roughly what you're talking about there, about 10 times now what we pay for electricity?
Correct.
How long is that bridge to that point in the future where we can get to renewables and, you know, I can run my car on something else, I can run my house on some other form of energy, et cetera?
Well, this is a question of policy. Technically, we could do it within 10 years. There's this new, as I'm sure you've heard, the Green New Deal, right? And okay, there I will say, as a political scientist, that there are some parts of that Green New Deal that are pie in the sky, but in terms of the speed with which we could be replacing our electricity with renewable, we have the technology today, and it's just a question of implementing it to where we could have zero carbon electricity within a decade.
So should someone like yourself, who is obviously very concerned about climate change, and as well as the fellow members who will be with you on this panel on February 15th, should you really be worried about William Nordhaus, who does, after all, support a carbon tax and says we have to do something about climate change, as opposed to holding a panel discussion about President Trump, who at one time claimed it was a hoax by the Chinese, or any various members of Congress who, for instance, have, you know, brought in a snowball onto the floor of the House or Senate to say that climate change isn't real? These are people who are making policy, after all.
Well, Gordon, I mean, you know that I ran for Congress against Fred Upton, and part of the reason I ran against him was because he sold out to the Koch brothers, who are millionaires, who got their millions largely through carbon-based energy, and that as chair of Energy and Commerce Committee, he tried everything he could do, and he was largely successful in blocking President Obama's climate action proposals, at least at the congressional level. So you know that I care a lot about the political system, but as a professor in a university, I think that we have an obligation to get the correct information out there for policy decisions. And insofar as Nordhaus has been the most influential scholar on this issue, but his numbers are way wrong. I think we have an obligation to explain that. And then, in fact, by sort of unpacking his mistakes, that also clarifies where the different harms from climate change come and how they add up. So this provides just a much deeper understanding of the harms from climate change that are going to be unfolding in the future and how we need to be dealing with them. So yes, of course I care about the politics, but as a scholar and as someone who cares about policy, addressing Nordhaus is also just, you know, for me, a very high priority.
So why do you think William Nordhaus is so influential in this field then?
Well, because he was the first economist who began to do this. Partly the way, I mean, he's influential because he developed the model, and then other economists adopted the model that he generated.
It's a simple matter of he got there first.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's definitely yeah.
And there hasn't been the sufficient pushback since then from other scholars?
Well, here in the United States, there are three main economists who've worked on these integrated assessment models: Nordhaus, a guy named Toll, and a guy named Hope. Hope is actually British, and they've all followed on the Nordhaus side. There's another economist, Ernest Stern, who came from the World Bank side. I don't know if you remember the Stern report that came out back around 2007, where Stern, as an economist, has been the most prominent economist pushing a far more, I think, realistic understanding of the really severe harms that are likely to come from climate change. But then as soon as Stern put out his report, Nordhaus attacked it. And Nordhaus has mercilessly attacked Stern for all these years because, in my view, Stern is putting out a much more realistic perspective, but that is, of course, critical of Nordhaus. Now, just to get the numbers clear, whereas Nordhaus is proposing a carbon tax of $35, Stern is a co-author of a publication with just about a year ago that is proposing $100, still about three times of what Nordhaus has proposed. But I think if we look at the real information, we really should be thinking something more like $250 today. So even Stern, I think, is still not going as far as we all should be.
Paul Clements is a political science professor at Western Michigan University and is also a member of Western's Climate Change Working Group. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Paul Clements and other WMU faculty will be part of a panel discussion on the true cost of climate change. That will be Friday afternoon, February 15th at 2 o'clock in room 3508 of Knaus Hall. You can subscribe to WMUK's West Southwest podcast through Apple iTunes and Google. While you're there, you can also leave a rating and write a review. You can also find the podcast at our website and through WMUK's app. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.